Hello.
Hello.
Ah, salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer. Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 87 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 1st of February. And hello, Juz.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Disney Pop people.
You sound miserable. What's wrong?
To be honest, mate, there's a bit of a hole in my heart that I don't think will ever be filled.
The doctor's about that.
Dunks left a big gaping hole that will never be filled.
But it will be, because we have a new co-host. Do you know what? We should drag this out for a little bit longer, because all the people currently listening to the show do not have a clue who won. And until we actually announce that Disney Brit Idol, announce it, they're not going to have a clue, you see. So, I don't know, should we put them out of their misery yet?
No, let's just ignore that other person for the whole show.
Okay, let's do that and do something entirely different. We have got a new co-host, and we could just announce them right now, but instead, we're going to play you the phone call that we made to that winner last week.
Disney Brit Podcast. A digital frontier. I try to picture clusters of information as they move through my MP3 player. What did it look like? Pins? Funimation? Were the circuits like Main Street? I kept dreaming of a world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day, I got in.
Hello?
Hiya.
Is that Kez?
Yes, it is.
How you doing? It's Adam.
I've been ill all day, unfortunately.
You've been ill?
Yeah, oh, I've been working from my bed.
Oh, no. Are you in bed now?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's very strange. I'm speaking to Kez in bed. I'm ringing because you entered the Disney Brit Idol competition.
Mm-hmm.
And you obviously came on the show last time, and people have been voting for you for the past 2 weeks, as well as for both Kimmy and for Nick. And what would it mean to you if you won?
Oh, it'd mean the absolute world to me. It'd be like my Disney dream come true.
Well, Kez, you are the winner of Disney Brit Idol.
Oh my god.
You are now got to put up with me and Juz every week as part of
it. Excellent. Oh my god, thank you so much.
That's okay. I thought I'd better ring you and put you out of your misery eventually. There you go, that's a phone call. Yes, a winner is indeed Kez Francis Watts, as it is now. Hi, Kez!
Hi, guys!
Why are you typing nasty things to us on Skype?
For the suitably embarrassing phone call that's just been played.
It's not suitably embarrassing. I don't know why that was suitably embarrassing.
Waking me up and hearing my...
Can I point out, you say,
voice.
Waking you up? It was the middle of the day. It wasn't
like
I waited till 4 a.m.
It was 5 o'clock and I was ill in bed.
She was ill in bed, that is true. She was ill and in bed, so we'll kind of let her off with that. But you were that ill, didn't you celebrate with the Chinese?
Oh, I did. Yeah. Well, it's only because you inspired it, though, so... It had to be done.
Because I inspired your Chinese.
He did, because you asked Zoe to make you some Chinese.
I did ask her to make me some Chinese. Don't say it like that. I asked her to make me Chinese, and it makes it sound like my wife cooks all my meals and I don't take my son on holiday. Make me sound worse and worse. Anyway, yes, Kez is now part of the team, which means we have a female, which means we don't have to do the tidying up or the washing up anymore. Anyway, right. We've just alienated all of our female listeners. Say we. Juz will probably very quickly put it right that it was me, not we. Or he's not. He's just going to sit there quietly.
You're just digging a hole. I'm just sitting here.
I am digging a hole. Shall I stop?
Mm-hmm.
No. Right. No. Okay. Well, let's tell you what we've got on this week's show. We've got a very limited nude section because, to be honest, did that say, did I say nude
it.
Section then? It sounded like nude. Very limited news section because there's not much news gone on in the past couple of weeks. But we have got a list of questions that came in, which sort of relates to one of the news items, which we're going to discuss a little bit. And Kez is going to talk to us about the John Carter event that her and Nick were able to go to last week. And also we've got Nicholas Cicero, not Nick Branch, Nicholas Cicero, who's going to come and talk to us about the Sorcerer of the Magic Kingdom sort of game experience that's happening over the Magic Kingdom and give us his thoughts, initial thoughts on the playtesting that's going on over there. And then that's pretty much the whole show, really. So I suppose with any further ado, we should start with some Disney news.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
So the Art of Animation Resort that's coming to Walt Disney World, they've got a new landscape of flavours food court coming, which is going to be opening in May, and it's all based around better options for you, and like customising your choice and lots of healthy eating. There's like a big emphasis, because usually when you're at a Disney resort, there's not always like a massive array of beverages. You get your fountain drinks, etc., but they're going to have things like smoothies, which are made to order, organic teas, beers and wines, and specialty coffees. That's quite exciting. And they're going to have five separate sections to this food court. One is soup, salads, soup and salad shop, so you can make your own salad.
Does that come wanna, deep fried?
Healthy.
Make your own salad. Lettuce, tomato. Woohoo! Look at me, I've made a salad.
And if you want something a bit more adventurous, then you've got World of Flavors, which is going to be an Indian and African themed food. So you can have like specialty like Indian breakfasts and African breakfasts. A pizza shop, which is pretty much standard at all the resorts. And in that pizza shop, you can customize your own pizzas as well, so all different toppings, etc. There's a burger shop, and you can get a breakfast burger there, which is quite an interesting concept.
Loving
I don't think I could manage a burger at breakfast, but
oh, I can. Burger with an egg on it.
And so, yeah, maybe they should bring back the pizza burger from Disneyland Paris, and that might be another fun option.
That's a stupid idea.
I'm loving the pizza burger idea. That's a great idea. I can't remember they got
the
rid of it. From
what happened to the pizza
burger? But they sort of just got rid of it, didn't they?
One of the best burgers in the world that ever tasted.
And they just... It's gone. Maybe they will. When we find out what the items are on the menu, they might bring it back.
I doubt it. They're evil.
No, I doubt it.
But they do have like random breakfast burgers, which is like steak and eggs and stuff. So maybe like
I like steak and egg burgers for breakfast.
It'd be like a gourmet version of like the Egg McMuffin or whatever.
This sounds like Juzzy's like ideal restaurant.
Have you never had a burger with an egg on it for breakfast?
I can't say I have.
With bacon. You have burger,
I've
bacon,
had a burger,
and egg.
I've had a burger, it's a breakfast with bacon burger. And egg. I can't have had one for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
You're just weird.
I'm not weird. It's probably just a Northern Standard breakfast.
Basically saying is to research the food for the new Art of Animation, they just came to the north of England.
It appears that way. They got an easy jet straight into Liverpool. And taken that as standard what everyone else eats in the whole of the UK.
Yeah, sounds good.
Excellent.
There you go. Done.
Right.
Is that everything, or is there more?
No, there's one final shop.
Okay.
It's the Market Shop, which is a grab-and-go type shop.
It's just paradise.
It is, if you like bagels and pastries. Ugh. So that's going to be like your standard little things like cakes and yogurts and things.
Get bagels.
Huh?
I love bagels.
It's just like a stale bat with a hole in it, a stale polo bread.
The good news is it's on the Disney dining plan, but they haven't released all the details and stuff yet, so that'll be in the coming weeks, and it's opening in May.
There you go. May.
This May.
Fab. So it'll be open just before some of the accommodation, won't it? No, does that open in May?
I think so. I think it all opens.
So it all opens together. That's fine. So we're saying two good shops, two not so good shops.
Yeah.
All
right, that sounds good.
The salad bar sounds more like somewhere you just go and get your stuff to put on your burger.
Well, yeah.
There's soups there as well, though.
But it's kind of interesting.
Soup is just flavoured water. No one likes it.
Flavoured water. But it sounds strange that they've called them all shops. And that doesn't normally happen. Or is this just to fit in with the Cars theme, I suppose, is it?
Might be. They said they haven't announced like the proper theming. It's still like being like done.
Right, so this is just the temporary name for
temporary
them.
Temporary names.
Okay, well, that's all right.
A bit of a silly temporary name, really.
It is a silly temporary name. But that's the only real bit of Walt Disney World news we've got for you that's come out over the past couple of weeks is actually interesting or relevant. So we're heading on the plane, flying over to Disneyland Paris, and just got a bit of Disneyland Paris news for us.
Yes, we're pad at this point because Juz is desperately trying to open his Firefox again after a bit of a crash.
What crash? We haven't had a crash.
No, we haven't. No. Although it's just still freaking me.
This is seamless.
My Skype still has Kez writing War and Peace for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I've still got Juz apparently writing a message on my Skype.
Something's gone terribly wrong with Skype on this Wednesday night. Oh, yes. By the way, just so you know, Adam says it's Wednesday, even though it's really Monday, so we can't let on.
Okay. Yeah,
and Kez also has to vouch that this is recorded seamlessly.
Oh, it is.
We actually record it in order. We haven't recorded anything else yet. Mm-hmm. We haven't paused, stopped, re-edited anything. It's just seamless.
Which is a shame, because the first pizza burger one was really funny.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's a shame.
You know, once we completely re-recorded a whole show.
We did. Why did we? I don't remember why we did that.
I think both of our recordings failed, and we had to do the whole show from top.
God,
honest with you, we used the same jokes throughout. It was quite incredible how we remembered it, and it was better than the second.
That's true. Have you got your news now?
Yes.
Seamless. Look at that.
Excellent.
There is problems on the M6 southbound. Traffic going back and forth. I'm gone wrong window. I think it's quite a good thing. And I can't remember if I said this was a good thing or a bad thing when we said we got rid of it last year. Anywho's, the Tarzan Encounter is coming back for the 20th anniversary, which is this year. Last year, they got rid of Tarzan. And they made them all go and do stitchy stuff and their cutbacks. And now they're going to put an advert out saying, please come back and apply for your jobs if you happen to be an acrobat. So I have put my application in.
You have. I am pleased that you've done that.
Ooh.
That's good. Has he put his... It sounds like he might have put his application in now.
I think so. I think we've lost him.
And... Yes, Skype may be having a bit of an issue this evening. It looks like Skype's having a big issue this evening. So much so.
It's an omen.
Seems to have vanished again.
I just give up.
Hey, he's back. There we go.
Did you get any of that or just start again?
No. We got about you putting your application in, and then we thought you'd gone to put your application in.
All right. So where did I get up to?
I don't know. Something about an application.
Ad-libbing.
I wasn't really listening, and I was reading me.
I wasn't. That's the problem. So that's why I was kind of asking whether Kez was listening.
I was listening.
So where did I get up to?
1 out of 3 is not bad. So, go on, tell us about Tarzan.
What, again?
Yeah, go on.
From the beginning?
Yeah, well, the listeners might not have been listening either.
Okay. Anyway, it's coming back in June.
Good. Moving on.
To Disneyland Paris.
Okay.
In the theatre bit by the food place, which has some really nice food in Frontierland area.
So it's going to the Chaparral Theatre near Cowboy Cookout?
No.
Oh.
No, I hadn't said that. It's coming to Teacups near the Pirates place.
Okay, that sounds good.
But I think it's really cool. I like the show, and I can't remember whether I said that last year or you slagged it off or it was the other way around.
It's usually me that slags it off because it's so old.
Okay, I don't think it's old. I think it's nice, it's bouncy, and it's like Cirque Soleil, but in Tarzan outfits. It's
nothing like Cirque du Soleil.
Mm-hmm.
No, in the slightest. It's like...
Are you dissing the acrobats?
It's like the acrobats auditioned for Cirque du Soleil, and they went, no, but you can go and do Tarzan.
Do you know what? I hope you go down there, someone recognises you, and they beat the hell out of you with their little gymnastic feet.
Turk sits on me.
Yeah.
We don't know what Kez's opinion on this is.
I've never actually even seen it.
How did she even get on the show?
I don't know.
I saw the Tarzan Rocks, though, when I was in Florida, and that was amazing.
I don't know what you saw. Perhaps it's just because he's wearing a very tight long coat.
But no, I'd love to go into this. It looks amazing. So, and there's...
Well, you can do. It's coming back.
It's alright.
It's just my news item.
It's just so old. It's so outdated.
Have you thought perhaps, Mr. Cooker, some of us are just old and outdated?
That's true.
At least it's another bit of like entertainment, because they got rid of the flying thing.
Yeah, I'll give you that. It's another bit of entertainment. It's just a bit old and outdated and written.
Only Stitches in it this year as well.
That's all right.
Not, you liar. You're just making things up now.
I bet he is somewhere.
Do you reckon he's going to swing through the tree?
He just comes down from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Ah, the Stitch!
Crash lander. Don't you joke. One of my funniest memories is our trip to Disneyland Paris when we went to watch that Stitch dance party in Tomorrowland.
That was bad, wasn't it? I think I walked away in disgust.
You did. I stayed there because I was filming, but you walked away and went and had a look in the Star Wars shop. Oh, that was terrible.
It was appalling.
Anyway, that's what Tarzan's back now anyway, which is fine, I suppose.
It's better than the Stitch, put it that way.
It is better than Stitch, that's true. Yeah. So they put that back into the Stitch, which is fine. Okay, that's the only two theme park news or resort news.
In 2 weeks, that's all you could find.
In 2 weeks, that's literally all there is that's of any interest. I know, how unreal is that?
Could we not make something up? Like a news and rumours.
Right,
make up a rumour, go on.
You make something up, go.
Disneyland Paris is moving to Spain in a shock move due to the economic climate in France, with its downgrade by pause and standard. They're moving to Spain, which has better economic prospects.
Okay. Kez, rumour.
Rumour? No idea.
My rumour...
Dear Dunks, when can you come back?
Exactly. Oh, yeah, shock news. Dunks is coming back to replace me. I'm only here for 1 week.
Shock news. Disney
it was just a publicity thing. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, shock news. Join the new Disney Cruise Mediterranean Mediterranean itineraries. They'll be offering dives aboard the Costa Concordia. Anyway, right.
The new Disney Cruise, they'll be doing netball. I stand.
Do you know what? I started saying that and I thought, should I? Is it too soon? It's too late now. I said it's fine.
Is this your illness has made your news sound like nude?
Yes, it probably is my illness. That's probably exactly what it is. I'm still poorly now, leaving it alone.
Can I point out I was really ill and I didn't broadcast it once?
No, I didn't. I only broadcast it this morning via Facebook.
Oh, you broadcast it 3 times. Zoe did.
Zoe brought it. See, that's not me. That's
you told it. You go, Zoe told my fans I'm not well.
That's anyway, talking about Disney Cruise Line, they've announced, finally, the itineraries for the 2013 trips on board The Wonder and the Magic. They were supposed to announce it just after the last show, and we announced that they'd be announcing it on the Wednesday and all that sort of stuff. And because of everything that happened with the Costa ship, they decided to sort of postpone it. They didn't give us a date as to when they were going to announce it, and then suddenly, from nowhere, it appeared on the Disney Parks blog. And this is basically what they announced, that the Disney Wonder will be departing for the first time from Miami. They'll be sailing 4- and 5-night cruises to the Bahamas and the Western Caribbean. Some of the ports may include Cozumel, Mexico, Grand Cayman, Key West and Nassau, Bahamas, as well as many stopping at the Disney's private island on Castaway Key. Now, the Wonder's also going to be returning to Alaska in May 2013, departing from Vancouver. It's going to sail to Tracy Arm, Skagway, Juneau and Ketchikan, I think that's right. And they will be heading all the way around there for several different length cruises. Now, the news that we were waiting for, obviously being a British podcast, is that it was going to be coming to our part of the world. And the Disney Magic is once again going to be returning to Europe in 2013. And it's going to be offering a variety of 4, 7, and 12-night cruises. 12-night is longer than they've ever done before. 4 is shorter than they've ever done before. But from what we understand, Carl Holtz, who is the president of the Disney Cruise Line, wants Disney to have a more permanent or longer-lasting base in Europe. And they're trying to work out what is the perfect length, which are the itineraries people are interested in. And from what we understand, the 4-night cruises are also going to have the offer of like a almost like a stay and cruise sort of thing. So although you get your 4 nights aboard, they're also going to offer some extra days of which you can enjoy in Barcelona and places like that as like a tour, a land tour as well. But these current itineraries are also going to include new destinations such as Greece and Croatia. We've already been to Italy, to France and to Spain before, but there's some new Spanish itineraries as well. So let's just quickly go through what you can enjoy if you climb aboard. If you are planning on going on a 4-night cruise, there's going to be two of these sailings on the 9th of July and the 6th of August. They're going to be starting in Barcelona, as are all the other cruises. They're going to go to Villefranche, which is for Monte Carlo and Cannes. You get a day at sea, you'll get a stop at Palma, Mallorca, and then back to Spain to Barcelona. Now, this is the only cruise in which Palma is going to be offered the 4 nights, not on any of the others. If you want a 7-night itinerary, then you're going to be able to enjoy pretty much the same itinerary as they offered back in 2010, which is again start from Barcelona, a day at sea, then to Villefranche, then La Spezia, Civitavecchia, Naples, another day at sea, and then back to Barcelona. So you get an extra day at sea in there as well, instead of stopping at Palma on the way back. That's going to be going from the 1st and 8th of June, then the 10th, 17th, 24th and 31st of August. Now, if you want to go for a 12-night itinerary, they're offering two different versions that you can go and enjoy. Now, the itinerary A, which is going to be going out on the 15th of June and the 13th of July, is going to include Greece and Turkey. So, again, from Barcelona, stopping at Villefranche, then La Spezia, then Civitavecchia or Civitavecchia, however you say it, I don't know.
I'm not going there.
Which is for Rome. 2 days at sea. Then it's going to go to Piraeus, which is for Athens, then Kusadasi in Turkey, then Mykonos, a day at sea, Valletta in Malta, then another day at sea, and then to Barcelona. The 12-night itinerary B, which is going to be going out on the 27th of June and 25th of July. That's, again, Barcelona, then to Villefranche, La Spezia, then for Rome, then Naples, and day at sea. Then you get half a day, well, you arrive half a day into your next day in Venice. You stay in there, arrive at 1 o'clock. You'll stay there overnight until 5 p.m. the next day, so you'll get a night in Venice. Then it's going to Dubrovnik in Croatia, a day at sea, then to Valletta in Malta, another day at sea, and then back to Barcelona. Any of those take your fancy?
No.
Kez?
I quite like the 12-night itinerary B one.
The one that includes Dubrovnik and Venice.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it'd be quite nice to stay the night at Venice, I think.
Yeah, it does sound like that's going to be amazing. That's the one we've booked ourselves on, which we're going to be going on. I know. We looked at it, we thought about it and went, you know what? Venice, let's do it. And this talk about shock news. Mm-hmm. There needs to be some big breaking news thing here. There you go. Harry is coming with us.
Look stop at the that. Campaign.
Stop the campaign. Harry's actually coming with us this time. Yeah, how's that's going to be two holidays in two years in a row that Harry's actually going to come with us. Can you?
He's going to be a dinghy at the back.
He's not actually coming on the ship. We're just going to tie him to the back.
Can I just say the issue I have? A, I'm not into ferries anyway.
But ferries. B, yeah.
The one it's costing you, I could take the family of five to Orlando.
I've got to admit, it isn't cheap. Yes, and that's kind of the reason why we did it. We knew it wasn't going to cost us any more than it would cost us if we went to Orlando. We knew we were thinking about taking Harry back to Orlando next summer, and then we saw this and thought, do you know what, we'll do the cruise and then we'll do Orlando the following year, because, you know, we don't know whether Disney are going to offer this again the following year or whether, you know, they're ever going to come back to Europe again. We'd hope they would, but that's sort of why we decided to go for it. Another thing is they've said on the parks blog that the 12-night cruises are going to offer some Disney Cruise Line firsts as well. I've contacted Disney's Cruise Line's PR guy. He's refusing to tell me any more, but has said that over the next couple of months they will be revealing more on the blog. But that sort of leads us on quite nicely, because I've had an email from Kimmy, who was one of our finalists, because they're looking to do a cruise next year on the Disney Magic, and she sent this. Alan and I are looking to book a 7-night cruise on the Disney Magic. Any advice RE booking I would really appreciate? Any cost cutting tips or deck tips? Also, advice on booking the flights, or do I use a travel agent for it all? I'm completely clueless when it comes to the cruise. At the moment, we have seen a cruise inside stateroom 7 nights for £1,500 for both, or which is category 11A, deck 6 or 9. or 1,600 a deluxe inside stateroom category 10C deck 1. Are these good prices, good decks, etc.? So let's start off with this question about booking. Kez, you've done a cruise, haven't you?
Yep. When I did it, it was like 10 years ago, unfortunately. But okay. We booked it through travel agents, and that worked out quite nicely.
So you did the whole thing through travel agents?
Yeah. It's because we stayed 7 days in Disney World and 7 days on the cruise.
Okay.
And I think all of our flights and everything were included, and that worked out quite nicely.
Well, she's looking for cost-cutting tips. So let me sort of tell you what we've done with ours. Now, our prices are obviously a lot more than Kimmy's will be. It's for three of us as well, rather than two, and it's obviously for 12 nights. When we first looked, the day they came out, we looked, and the cheapest we could find for Category 11C was $4,400 for the three of us. And we looked at that and thought, well, it's a lot of money, but, you know, we would pay the same sort of price to go to Orlando. So we basically went to book it, and we did. We booked it. But just as we went to book it, there wasn't any 11C available at one point. And they then became slightly cheaper, and we got it for, I think, $4,300 and something, including ground transfers and that sort of stuff. Because one of the problems with Barcelona is the airport and the port aren't particularly close together and aren't easy to get to if you don't know Barcelona very well. So we always book the ground transport because that just helps us get from A to B really easy. Now, while we've been booking all of this and looking through things, I think it was Sunday evening, I went onto the website again to see what the availability was looking like for that particular cruise. And suddenly these Category 11Cs were coming up, but they were coming up much, much cheaper. In fact, they were coming up at £4,170. And we were like, hang on a second, we're paying £4,300 here. What's going on? Why is there such a reduction in price? And this is my sort of tip for you, Kimmy. The reason they're much cheaper is because although they're classed as Category 11C, the truth is they're actually Category 11C guaranteed. Now, the difference between 11C and 11C guaranteed, as we found out with our cruise last year, was that basically they guarantee you will get at least a Category 11C, but you could also get upgraded to higher. So we booked last year a Category 11C for our cruise, but basically they overfill the cheaper price so that they then bump up those people who have bought early to fill up the lower categories, because the lower categories will always sell easier later than the higher categories were, and it's much easier, and to say thank you for being so loyal for so long, they'll bump people up. And we ended up going from 11C to a 10B, I think it was, last year. Now, what's the difference between 11C and 10B? 11C is 184.
One digit.
Yeah, one digit. 11C is 184 square foot, and you basically get a bathroom and a toilet in one room. And a 10B is 214.
In the same room as the bedroom?
Yeah, exactly the same room. Yeah, no. And a 10B is 214 square feet, plus you get a split bathroom and toilet. To be honest, 184 and 214 square feet, you don't really feel much difference between the two. And the split bathrooms, okay, but I don't know whether I'd pay extra for it. I don't know, what did she say? It was an extra £100? An extra £100. I don't know whether I'd pay an extra £100 for a split bathroom. She also says her 11As are deck 6 or 9, and her 10C is deck 1. Now, depending on how you feel with regards to seasickness and that sort of stuff, not that you're going to feel much on it because it's such a big boat. If you do get a rough sea, you're less likely to feel the rough sea at the bottom than you are if you're at the top. So if you are thinking about that, then that might be one thing to consider as well. Were there all the questions she asked? Booking flights. Now, I think Kimmy is Leeds Way, if I want to remember rightly. You will be able to get, and they certainly did when we went, there are direct flights from Liverpool to Barcelona. It's about 2 hours, 20 minutes. EasyJet do them. And if you book them early enough, you'll get them dirt cheap. I think we got them £150 return for the two of us when we last did it. So it is dirt cheap. There's plenty of hotels out towards the airport as well if you wanted to just go and get a shuttle bus and stuff into town for the day before, or just fly in the day that you're going in is absolutely fine as well. But hopefully that will answer a lot of people's questions. If you are clueless about cruising, which Kimmy says she is, you want to check out there's a website called cruisecritics.com that's really good. Also, the Disboards they have some information about, well, people review different cabins on the cruise ships, and you can check the reviews to see what there is available. Obviously, if you've got a guaranteed room, you can't do that, but certainly you can sort of go on those different elements and see all the things that are going on with regards to each of the ships. But if you've never done a Disney cruise, you can afford to do it, it is definitely well worth doing it. I think, Kez, you could probably vouch for that, can't you?
It was amazing. I was quite young when I did it, it was still like a brilliant experience, and the places on these itineraries look absolutely incredible. And it'd be interesting because I did my Man the Caribbean, so I'd love to do one around Europe.
Yeah, the Europe one last year was amazing. And just to give you a rough sort of idea of what, because you know, people say, might be saying, that's a lot of money for a 7-night holiday, etc., etc.
That's a lot of money for a 7-night holiday.
There you go. It's almost like we hadn't rehearsed it. Don't forget that you get in all of your food included, all of your soft drinks are included, your room service and all of that stuff is included. You have got to add on the cost of alcoholic beverages. You have got to add on things like tips for room service, tips for your the person who's your room host and your servers and all that sort of stuff. So that does get added on top. But you know, the majority of your cruise is paid for. Now, they're looking at £1,600 for a room. And what I did is I went on to somewhere like First Choice, which is a British website where they will be offering all-inclusive holidays. And I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll search for an all-inclusive holiday in accommodation that is of a similar standard to the sort of thing that you would get on the Disney cruise, therefore the similar sort of service you would get. And it's coming out at around £974 down to about £858 per person for a week. Yes, okay, that does include your airfare as well, if you're looking at about £150 on top. Although, you know, my cruising knowledge isn't astoundingly brilliant, but the way to work it is a good deal is somewhere around £100 a night per person. So what they're looking at there, 1,500, 7 nights, 2 people, 1,400. So yeah, they're not far off. Is that sort of price not going to lure you to a Disney cruise, Juz?
I can get a travel lodge for £29 a night for a whole family.
And what are you going to do? Dress
it's just
up
too expensive, mate. I can go to Orlando and I could probably still spend less money than you're spending your tips and stuff. It just doesn't appeal to me.
I know what you mean, and I can see where you're coming from with the tips, but it is truly amazing experience, and I don't think you can't really explain to anybody what it's like until they've done
it. I've been on a ferry across the Mersey. I kind of know what it's like.
That doesn't count. It's not
the
same.
It was.
No, it is a brilliant experience.
See, Kez is with me. It is an amazing experience. And
the thing is, it's not just the ship. Like, the ship itself is incredible, and all the stuff that goes on, and like the brilliant shows and everything they put on. But you get to stop at like all the amazing places as well and experience like some of that culture.
Yeah.
And it's the combination of both of those that's really worth the money.
Yeah, it really is.
The light culture.
Italy itself is stunning. You know, we'd never been to Italy.
It smells and they're virtually bankrupt.
Well, there is that. But we'd never been to Italy before. And when we went last time, we realised just how amazing Italy was. And that's part of the reason why we decided we wanted to go back, because it is going to some of the places we've been to before. But then we saw that overnighter in Venice and just thought that will be stunning to be
smells
to go around
and
to Venice
sinking.
In the evening. As long as it's not sunk before we get there, that's fine. And then places like Croatia, which is one of those places I would never choose to go on holiday.
They do rubbish song contests.
But yet, although I would never choose to go on holiday, I would certainly, go on a cruise and go and see it. But if you're not sure about what you need to book or how you need to book it or all your choices and things like that, and you're looking at the website and you're not quite sure how to go about doing that, then do give Disney a ring. If you give them a ring, they will help you. They're so helpful for us, because I booked my original trip, which cost me slightly more. And then as soon as I'd done that, then I got the new price, and I sort of made a provisional booking for that. And then I rang them up and they just went, yeah, not a problem. I can see you found it cheaper. We'll just transfer your deposit over from this one to this one. No problems whatsoever. So I was really impressed with that. And they cancelled the other booking and they were able to say, you know, yep, that's still guaranteed, all this sort of stuff. to do try it out. And if you're not sure about guaranteed status and all that sort of stuff, they will help you with all of that as well. I've never known a cruise company be so so amenable towards customers. Mm. You know, you find, and I think I spoke about this last time, that so many companies go, away, you paid it, now it's tough. Whereas the Disney Cruise Line, you know, keep an eye on the price and things like that. And also remember that you can actually put a room on hold for 3 days without paying a deposit or anything. And there's not a problem with doing that either. So you can do that. And then, and the other thing with people putting them on hold for 3 days, it means that they will keep checking back every couple of days because rooms will become available that maybe weren't there a couple of days before. Kez, anything you want to add?
No, except for I wish I was going.
We should have a Disney Brit one. Everyone should come together.
We should. See, look, the Lou Mangiello has one. We should have one.
We should have one too. Okay. There you go.
Disney Brit Cruise, do it.
Right, well, I'm going on the 12th night on the 25th of July. So if anyone wants to join me, that's where I'll be. All right, there we go. That is the question answered. Hopefully that has helped you, Kimmy. Anything else you want to know, email us podcast@disneybrit.com. Right, we're going to take a brief break and then Nick's going to come and join us with Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.
Hi everyone, this is Craig Duncan. Please come and join me for my soul show every Sunday at 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern. You'll only find me on Orlando Sky Radio. Come by and say hi.
With every sun that comes up, comes the question, where to go out on this town? Downtown Disney. It's like hitting the hot spots of every happening city on the planet. Restaurants you've read about. Shops you've dreamed about. Clubs that cut your curiosity loose. Downtown Disney. In a city of choices, the metropolis of fun.
Those of us in the UK, which is 3 out of this 4 conversation, don't get the chance to go to Magic Kingdom as much as we like, and therefore we don't get the chance to try out all of the new cool things that are going on. Like Sorcerers in the Magic Kingdom, of which Nick, you know, our Vinomation buddy, the small 2-inch guy, has had the opportunity to go over to Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom, and he joins us. Hello, Nick.
Hello, guys.
So,
hey, girl.
Guys and girl. Yeah, you have to get used to saying that, aren't we? Come on, tell us about this Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom. Is it really as good as people are making out?
We will see. That is very much yet to be determined. Right now, they're just playtesting this new attraction, this new game. And so not everything is fully realized yet, but it has the possibility, guys, of being one of the most fun experiences at the park, because we've talked many times about how I love the new interactive elements within the parks. You know, they're building in the...
Oh, we all knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
The Haunted Mansion. And this is just another level. This is just another level of that interaction, and it could be so much fun. Now, the premise is kind of like set up like a role-playing game. And so, you know, honestly, if you it's an updated version of like maybe Dungeons and Dragons you might have played as a kid, but it's
no way
it's Disney-fied.
Right. Well, like the cartoon where they get on that ride and then they disappear into.
You know, just... Nick has just shown himself up there, doesn't it? Like we all played when we were young.
Are you a Dungeons and Dragons geek?
I know that.
Uh oh.
So, you know, it's one of those RPG role-playing games that you play with cards, but it's very much Disney-fied. Now, right now, during the testing phase, the big problem is why we can't get a good grasp on it yet is because there's no real strategy involved yet. Now, when you go up and you start playing the game, you get these 5 playing cards. And these cards have attributes on them, and then you go around to the different portals and you interact with the video screens. Well, right now, it doesn't matter what card you hold up. You're always going to win. You're always going to cast a spell and things like that. But as it launches in February, the cards will actually matter, and you could win, you could lose. You need to find the right combination to win.
You can actually lose in a Disney park.
Oh, dear.
Yes. And I love that. I love the idea of that because there'll be three settings on the game. So you could play the easy setting, which we're all playing right now in the test phase.
Right.
So every kid's going to win. You could play the medium phase, which introduces some more strategy into the game, or you can play the hard version, where hopefully it is really hard. Hopefully, even someone that's used to playing video games and games like this can lose, because that will just give us something else to do, give frequent visitors to the park something extra to do, because this is a long-range thing. This is something that has a ton of replayability for people like annual pass holders or people that go to the parks all the time.
Because some people have sort of tried to compare this to Kim Possible. I take it it's a whole nother level to that.
It is a whole nother level, because Kim Possible is something where you're just going from station to station and interacting with an element there. You're triggering these elements to these animatronics to come out, or noises to happen, or things to happen. And yes, it's comparable in that sense to where you're getting this interactivity and going around and doing things, but this adds in that other layer of, this is a game. You're using strategy, and at each portal that you go to, you need to actually figure something out. It's not just like you're using that communicator to trigger something. You're actually totally interacting with it. Your choices dictate your outcome.
Right, okay. Now, for what I understood, there were 70 cards initially, or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. This is the cool thing. Yes, the game is going to be great. The other thing real quick is you get this key card, and the key card has an RFID chip in it, and it tracks your stats and everything. Right now, it tracks it for a week. So a family on vacation could come, start a game on a Monday, and then pick it up on a Wednesday and keep playing different games on that same card. Well, hopefully longer term, it could store your stats for a greater period of time. But right now, yes, you get that and you go around and you interact, and it stores your information for that time. Now, you can only go once a day. And when you go, they give you also, in addition to that key card, they give you five of these playing cards. Now, these playing cards, I'm telling you right now, this is the next big thing. This is the next big Disney collectible. This is the next big craze. Forget Vinylmation. It's Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom cards.
So what, you're going to have Destination Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.com next, is that right?
We very well might. Actually, on DestinationVinylmation.com, just before I got on here with you guys, I updated our checklist. We're putting together a comprehensive checklist of all the cards and the pictures that we collect. I think it's going to be very, very cool. Like you said, there are 70 cards. Each card has a different piece of artwork with a Disney character on it, and the artwork's absolutely beautiful. The Disney Parks blog actually just today released some more pictures of those cards. And they are very collectible. They're very, very cool looking, and you're going to see people trade them. There's no doubt about that. Because also, once the strategy comes into play, it's not just a fun thing to collect. Once the strategy comes into play, you're going to want more cards to complete your collection to go to battle with. Because you're going to get to bring your cards with you from home. You're just not going to get to use those five cards that they give you on that day. You could bring your 10 from home and use whatever combination you want.
But you say there's 70, but is there likely to then be another 70 for medium, another 70 for hard, do you think? Just to make it that bit harder, that if you've got three different Lightning McQueens, it's then working out which one of those three you need to use for that particular villain.
Right now, that part is just a tiny bit unclear. The Disney Parks blog did a good job of clarifying some things today on their post. They said there's going to be three levels of cards. Now, but that's still within the 70, as far as we know. But there's also different cards out there right now in this testing phase. There are like for example, say there's a Lightning McQueen card that looks exactly the same, has the exact same attributes, but has a different number or a different symbol on it. So we still are a little bit unclear about what's just their testing or what is going to happen once the game launches. Right now, it seems like there's going to be 70 cards, one of each design, but there's going to be different layers in there. What's really interesting is there'll be commons, there'll be uncommons, and there'll be rare cards. So it's going to be harder to find the rare cards. They'll only be handed out at a, you know, at a lesser rate than the common cards, obviously. So there is going to be that actual collecting value to these, where people are going to want to search out some of the more rare cards, and those will probably most likely have better attributes on them to play in the game.
Now, you talk about this being the next big collectible after pin trading Vinylmation. One of the it's not a concern. One of the things, obviously, with pin trading is you get some people who take it too far. They're the sort of people who stalk people around the parks because they're after a specific pin, and they become very, very sort of specific about what they'll trade for and what they won't. My concern is you're going to get to a booth, let's say, in Adventureland. I think there's one by Pirates of the Caribbean. And as soon as you arrive, there's going to be five or six people stood around it waiting to see what card you got, and then they're going to pounce to then try and get that card off you. Have you seen any of that start to happen, or is there a concern that that might begin to happen and therefore begin to ruin the experience for some people?
Believe it or not, yes. I don't know how that's going to impact the experience, but I saw something happen along those lines. There was actually a guy walking around, and now testing has only been going on for, what, 2 weeks,
yeah,
maybe?
About that.
At this point, yeah, there was a guy walking around with a box of his cards that he's collected already. Now, mind you, this only tests like maybe 3 days a week for like 4 or 5 hours a day. This guy already had a box full of these cards, and he's walking around to each of the portals. He didn't bother guests. I did not see him bother guests, but he was asking cast members. Now, this is very interesting because there are going to be cast members hanging around each of the portals, or, you know, that have an area that they maybe do a walk around because they might have to help out guests. So there are going to be cast members there, and these cast members specifically did have cards on them. And so the guest with his box of cards was actually trading with the cast members at this time. So I could see that interaction happening at least right away. Guest to guest, I have not seen that yet.
Okay, that's good.
Do you have the world's greatest theme park, and the man walks around with a box of cards? Is that just lost on me?
No,
Hey, Juz. When you're an annual pass holder, right, and you've done everything a billion times, you look for new things like this to do. Heck, that's why I go around taking pictures of my Vinylmation at the park. That's why I'm going to be playing this game. You look for these new things to do.
Well, I would say if you get to that stage, you need to leave.
Reevaluate your life.
Give
up
your pass.
Yes.
And go home.
Go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, I really like the idea of it, the fact that it can be so interactive, and the fact that it can change so easily. They can just include new things, and, you know, suddenly a spell that worked in the past might suddenly not work anymore because so many people have used it, the villains become used to that spell, and then you have to try something else, and it could just be a constantly evolving thing.
I think it could be, yes.
I think it needs higher stakes. I think if you lose, then you and your family get marched out of the park. You know, make it a bit higher stakes game
life.
Here.
Oh, it'd be great if you win and you get like a fast pass or something like that.
No, you
That'd
get
cool
you get
too.
Bumped up in accommodation to a deluxe, and then you can gamble that again.
This is what you could have won.
Well, they're talking about
too interesting.
Sorry. So in each of the lands, is there like multiple storylines for each like scenario?
Yes, and that's what's really cool too. Right now, there are 20 portals in all in 4 different lands. There's 5 in Main Street, there are 5 in Adventureland, there's 5 in Fantasyland, and there's 5 in the combination of Frontierland and Liberty Square. And each of those locations, to my knowledge right now, the best I could tell, has 3 different storylines in each of the lands. So that's a lot of different possibilities for you to get different storylines. And a couple of that I played, I played a storyline with Lion King. I played a storyline with 101 Dalmatians. I saw a storyline with Emperor's New Groove, which I think is fantastic to pull a classic animated film like that. I mean, that is just great.
Now, I know you've got to go and fly in a minute, but just before you go, can you just, because you've told us about the game, Can you just...
Is he being Tinkerbell?
He's going to... Finally, okay. he's been allowed. Can you just explain to us a little bit about the exact game, how this exact game works then, and your experience of it, so how your game went?
Yeah, well, real quick, I want to finish up on the cards, because there's one other thing, and this goes to that craziness about the collection. There are rumors, and I haven't heard this confirmed by Disney, and maybe you've heard this too, that they will be selling cards as well, like upgrades and things like that. Have you heard that yet?
No, haven't heard that.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting too in the cards. We'll see what happens with that. As far as the actual gameplay, I found the flow of the game and the gameplay itself to be rather flawless. Basically what you do is there's a chip in your sorcerer's card, and you go around and you scan that at a lock at the portal. And the very first portal is inside the firehouse where you get all your stuff, and that tells you exactly where to go. And all the locations that pop up on the screen that tell you where to go are also have a symbol associated with them, and you get a map. And it's very easy to find your way around, even if you're not familiar with the parks.
Right.
So you go to the next portal, and you swipe your card, and it triggers the portal to come alive, and you interact with it. Everything works well. You have to get the swiping card. You have to get that right up to the lock. You can't like stand a foot away. It doesn't read it that far away. So I found that, and at each portal there's a circle to stand on, which they call it's the logo for the game, and you stand on that, and that's about 5 feet away from the video screen. Now, what I did find is you do have to stand on that. My friend was like a foot to the side of that circle, and his spells weren't registering. So you do have to stand on that. But every time we did stand directly on that, everything worked perfectly. So the gameplay experience is rather flawless. Now, how it works is there's two video cameras. There's one on each side of the portal. And when you hold up your card to play your spell, you hold it face forward directly in front of you. And it's just like a recognition software that recognizes which card you have. Say it recognizes Lightning McQueen, so it plays Lightning McQueen's spell, which is ka-chow, and you have lightning come down. Like for Prince Naveen, his spell is frogs, and you hold up his cards, and a bunch of frogs just attack the villain. So all the characters have these different animations, and the animation is beautiful. So, I mean, not even just the gameplay. Going around in the storylines are cohesive. So, seeing these storylines, seeing the animation, it's just a lot of fun.
Sounds fantastic.
Mm.
Sounds like a real development on from what they did with Kim Possible and something that's going to change more and more as it becomes more and more popular. I take it there's no sort of deadline or no date as to when exactly this is going to open, is there?
No, the Disney Parks blog today just said February. Right now, if you're in the Orlando area, you could... usually it's playtesting. I heard Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays is what I heard, and about the range of 1 to 4, 1 to 5 p.m.
Okay.
So that's the best time to kind of try to find it.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you.
And real quick, if anyone's been on a cruise line, I heard it's similar to Midship Detection Agency, actually.
Oh, okay.
More closer to that than Kim Possible.
Right, okay, so we're looking at Midship, which, yeah, it's the same idea, isn't it, where you get given the detective cards and you go through it that way. It's exactly the same idea. Wow, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on, Nick.
No problem, I appreciate it, guys.
And there's an article up on DisneyBrit.com if you want to find out more about it there. And no doubt Nick will update us as he gets the opportunity to play a little bit more and we'll come back and tell us a bit more.
Of course.
Thank you, Nick.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
On behalf of our entire flight crew, thanks for soaring with us.
This is Disney Brit Bytes with me, Adam, from the Disney Brit Podcast over at DisneyBrit.com. And today's tip Well, maybe you're the sort of family that quite likes to go on thrill rides together, but maybe members of your family aren't quite big enough to handle the likes of Expedition Everest. Well, how about Big Thunder Mountain? Because Big Thunder Mountain can give you that little extra bit of burst of speed, depending on the time of day you go. If you go over to Big Thunder Mountain in the middle of the day, when the sun is at its hottest, the grease on the track has melted enough to give that attraction just a few extra miles per hour, the opportunity to really get the wind through your hair. So not big enough yet for those bigger attractions, get that extra burst of speed over at Big Thunder Mountain in the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World.
On behalf of our entire flight crew, thanks for soaring with us.
See, I really want to do Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom now. I want to go over. Maybe I shouldn't have booked my cruise. I want to go do Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom now instead. No. Right. Kez has already been doing some reporting for us. We were lucky enough to be invited to a press event screening preview. I don't quite know exactly what it was. For John Carter, the new film that's coming out, that's directed by Andrew Stanton, and he's been released under the Walt Disney Pictures name. Her and Nick Branch were both able to go, and you will have found that Nick wrote an article on Disney Brit that went up last week, and both Kez and Nick took some audio for us as well, which you can hear in a few moments. But, Kez, do you want to explain to everybody a little bit about what this thing was that you went to?
Yeah, it was a question and answer session about the film itself, and we were shown five clips from the film because apparently they still haven't even finished, like, editing all the film together and stuff.
Right,
so
okay.
They said, right, the deadline's really tight, we can only show you these five clips. But it was quite a broad range of clips, so you kind of get an idea of, like, the whole film and, like, where it's going to progress.
Right, okay.
It's based on a book called The Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs. And it's basically, that's a sci-fi book, which, like, all the modern-day sci-fi stuff, like Star Wars, etc., is, like, pulled influence from.
Yeah.
And because a lot of people were asking, is there concerns that you're going to be ripping off all these other films? Because, obviously, if people have already drawn, like, Avatar and stuff, have drawn inspiration from this book, aren't you just going to rip it off? But they were so confident in their creative process, etc., that I said, no, this is going to be something that really stands out. And looking from the stuff that we saw, it is really amazing. And the work that's gone into it was really immense. They had the animation supervisor there and the visualist effects supervisor, if I can get it out. And they were telling us about the processes they went through, because they had some really amazing actors working on it. They said it's a shame that we can't use their expressions, and so they did a lot of motion capture stuff, and they got them up to make the main inhabitants of this planet, which is Mars, but they call it I can't think what they call it, sorry.
It should be in the audio though, shouldn't it?
It is in the audio. It's like Bar's Room or something.
Okay,
yeah, bar zoom, sorry. And their inhabitants are 9 foot tall creatures. And so they put the actors up on stilts so they'd have the right eye levels, etc. Mm. So the effort that went in was amazing. And the art director was telling us about how they looked at all the architecture and the maps of Mars and, like, based all their landscapes on that, as well as in actual places. So they kind of built in like the buildings into actual rock sculptures that exist in our world, basically, so that it was a believable, like, landscape.
Right, okay.
And they had the main star, Taylor Kitsch, there as well, just telling us about his, like, process, how he got into the characters, etc.
Because I was reading an article about this recently, and they were saying, or this article was talking about how, you know, Disney had to be very careful because this is obviously a very famous book. It was written by the same guy who wrote Tarzan. But, you know, a lot of the action sequences, a lot of the stories have already been stolen by the likes of Star Wars and that sort of stuff. And I know that Disney sort of said at the event, yes, you know, we're not worried about that problem. Do you think were they being a bit blasé about that, or do you genuinely think...
No, I think it's got the legs to stand on its own, to be honest, away from all these other things. The closest thing I think it's going to get compared to is Avatar, just because of the fact of these, like, creatures on an alien planet, etc. like that.
Right.
But I think it's a really interesting mix, because it starts off in the Civil War, and John Carter himself is a Civil War veteran, and he gets arrested, and he ends up going through a portal in a cave, and that's how he ends up on Mars. So I think that kind of that interesting beginning even sets it apart from all these other things. So I don't think they'll be drawing too many comparisons to things. As I said, the closest thing I reckon is going to be Avatar.
Because I'm always a bit wary about these sort of sci-fi epic war sort of movies, and I've seen so many of them that have been truly terrible. And this one still, I've seen the trailer and it looks okay, but I'm still kind of not sure whether or not I want to go and see it. So you're saying that this is a film that's going to be much better than I'm expecting it to be?
Yeah, it's going to be one of those ones you think, oh, when am I going to go and see it? But yeah, I really recommend going to see it. All the clips that we saw, it's like a good mix of like humour, so like Indiana Jones kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of humour, and the acting is really good, so... And if you don't like the story, the visuals are amazing. So you could sit there, and the music. So I think it's a whole package, to be honest.
Do you think they've underplayed this then?
I think they have, because I was quite shocked at how much it hasn't been publicised everywhere. Because I heard about it like a couple of months ago and I thought, oh, okay. But yeah, I'm shocked with a film that's going to be such a big epic that it hasn't actually been publicised very much.
Because they originally talked about it being called John Carter of Mars. And then they sort of dropped that, and it's just now known as John Carter. Do we know when it's being released? I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think it's 9th of March.
9th of March. So we're pretty close then. We're just over a month. In that case, that means then... they're still editing. Wow, that really is very, very close. But hopefully we'll get a chance to see that before its general release. And we'll be able to... let you know what it's like, because we're lucky enough to be invited to some of the sort of advanced screenings for things like that. What you're going to hear in a second then is the audio that both Nick and Kez took at the event itself. Before we go, I just want to quickly, because I'm allowed to talk about it now after the last show when I was kind of allowed, about the Muppets, right? And they've been on every single radio show, television show, the lot, you name it, over the past week promoting this film. And Chris Moyles was saying this week how amazing it is. Jonathan Ross this week's been saying how amazing it is. And usually they're just sort of blowing smoke when they say stuff like that, because they have to, because they've got the guests on the show and stuff like that. But I have to say, it is genuinely brilliant. It
Excellent.
Is funny. It is heartwarming. The songs are just so well done. They, you know, it never takes itself too serious. They're just continually taking the mickey out of themselves and everybody else. It's got the usual celebrity guest stuff on there as well. And, you know, I'm not the sort of person who goes, oh, it's a film, it's made by Disney, it must be amazing. Because they're not all amazing, unfortunately. And that's kind of one of the things that worries me about John Carter, that, you know, Disney and live action do not always mix very well. We look at things like Race to Witch Mountain, stuff like that, that just really didn't work. Sorcerer's Apprentice.
That was a brilliant film.
What, Sorcerer's Apprentice?
No. Race to Witch Mountain. Both of them.
Yeah, but they were both okay.
No, they're both brilliant.
Like National Treasure was very good. National Treasure
Nicolas
2.
Cage. Was no, bit... Nick, the Nicolas Cage is awesome.
Actually. Oh, okay, sorry, yes. But I'm always worried about the live action stuff, but the Muppet stuff, honestly, is brilliant. You have to go and see it.
So is it gone back to, you know, like old school Muppets when they were really good, like the Muppet Cape stuff?
It's kind of weird, because the first 20 minutes or so is a bit like all the Muppets have just been eradicated in a fire, and it's a tribute to the Muppets sort of thing. We have a lot of tributes to the old Muppet stuff, and all the way through it is a tribute to all the old classic Muppets.
Right.
And then Walter, who is the new Muppet character, he basically goes to LA with his brother, and they try to resurrect the Muppets and survive, basically. And it's all about the Muppets all getting back together and that sort of stuff. So it's kind of a mixture between a tribute and a brand new movie.
So it's a reunion show.
Yeah, kind
so
of.
It's like steps.
Yeah, much better than that. But there's some brilliant gags, some brilliant, because obviously they were really popular 70s, 80s, and they've got a lot of 80s gags in there. And they've got some really great 80s music in it as well, actually, which I quite like, the fact they haven't tried to go for, you know, a lot of franchises that have been around for a long, long time have come back and then tried to modernise themselves. You look at, like, Smurfs, Alvin and the Chipmunks and that sort of stuff have brought themselves up into the modern era, whereas the Muppets have sort of lived in that still, like, limbo era of we don't quite know what sort of era you're trying to bring across. But it's quite funny, and they haven't tried
to
go.
Dad era.
Is that what it is? Dad era. They haven't tried to go too trendy and cool with it. You know, they've got a Nirvana song sung in a barbershop quartet at one point.
Excellent.
And then they've got, like, the Chickens do a version of Forget You by CeeLo Green. So there's sort of a random mix of all sorts of stuff. And then we built the city, Starship comes in at one point. So it's kind of nice that they haven't tried to go, we must make this hip and trendy for the noughties era sort of thing. It's actually still the Muppets being the Muppets.
Excellent.
And the Muppets, well, you know how they do. They don't take themselves too seriously. They make it blatantly obvious that they're making a film and they're all playing characters and all that sort of stuff, which is good. As I've said in the review, which you'll find on DisneyBrit.com, the only downside is the cameo actors they've got, most we knew of, but there were several in there where we just went, who are you? Sorry, what are you? I don't know who you are. That sort of stuff. But other than that, it was good. Anyway, John Carter, which is what we're talking about now, do make sure you listen to the audio that's going to play now.
Yeah, good question. We did. I did a lot of research into Olympus Mons, for example. You know, the biggest crater, the size of France. Looked at a lot of NASA photographs. In fact, the opening shot of the movie, we start in space and we travel all the way through. You can see the sort of canals of Mars, or what Edgar Rice Burroughs thought were the canals of Mars. And we travel all the way through the clouds right down into the landscape, and then integrated the sort of Utah landscape into that. But yeah, a lot of reference to it. But then again, you know, we needed to make sure that it fitted in with the live action stuff that we shot when we were in Utah. So a little bit of one and half the other. But yeah, as you will, you know, I'm sure notice from the film, you know, Andrew's very grounded into, you know, make it photoreal. That's the most important thing. You know, we don't want a sci-fi movie for a sci-fi movie's sake. It's got to feel like you're really there. So live action photography and yeah, a good pinch of what Mars would really be like is what we ended up with.
I think Andrew said that this, you wanted this film to feel like a period film about a place we know nothing about. And that was, so it ends up being a stylized version of Mars, but for
blue skies.
Dramatic reasons.
Didn't go for the sort of red sky, which, you know, traditionally people think on Mars would look like. In fact, a sunset on Mars would be purple. That's how geeky I've turned out to be.
Sorry,
that's your mind
here.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you. I was jumping in the 1, 2, 3. There you go. And then just jumping through this one.
Hi. Sorry. Was the film always conceived as a 3D movie? And at what point in the production, Was the film always conceived as a 3D movie? And what considerations do you need to kind of take in order to make that happen?
The movie was going to be 3D. We knew pretty much when we started shooting that it was going to be 3D. We decided not to shoot it in 3D. Mostly because of the CinemaScope lenses and that feel that we wanted to go. The DOP definitely wanted to shoot it for real in that way. We dimensionalised it afterwards, which has been done badly in some cases in the past. And I can tell you that this process has been done very well. It's the best work I've seen. And I think you'll be pleased with the result. There are considerations, especially animation-wise, about why we would, you know, we took into account how the shot would be done and displaced the shoes.
Yeah, I think in animation terms, it reduced the amount of cheating we could do.
Yeah.
We'll have to cheat, cheaters, big cheaters. So we have to make sure that, you know, if Taylor's in the shot and Tara's are standing right next to him, he has to stand right next to him in order to cast the shadows, in order to make sure that when you see it in 3D, that they look like they're sharing the same dead space, as we would call it, depth of camera. So that presented us with just basically like a set of handcuffs. It could still work, but you're kind of limited in what you can do in some cases. But it kept us honest. But the other thing is, if you ask Andrew about the 3D aspect of it, I think he would be very honest with you and tell you that he had enough on his plate with making this film, his first live action film. It's a very complicated film to make from a visual effects standpoint. And 3D was just something that, you know, we talked about at the beginning, should we shoot it in stereo or do it as a post-process? And he was like, you know what, I've got enough to worry about, let's do it as a post-process. So it was just something we need to have to juggle. We didn't need it any more complicated than we already had it.
You find that 3D talent?
I am, like, you know, when it's done right. Yeah. Absolutely, and from what I've seen a couple other scenes as well, and I love it on this. It's the type of movie, obviously, which, when it is done right, it's great.
Were you relieved it wasn't shot 3D, or
were
you slightly disappointed? Was that nice to be like a full spirit camera, or
something
at the lens?
To be honest, style. It really didn't factor into my prep.
Come on. Right, we have a guy, sorry, not all for it.
It's a two-parter, if that's okay. The first question is regarding the name of the film. I know it was changed from John Carter of Mars to just John Carter. The reason for that, and also a question for Taylor. How was it from going to a much more smaller production like Friday Night Lights to a much more bigger scale like John Carter?
I can answer the John Carter a bit. John Carter of Mars, it's truly an origin story. When you see the film in its entirety, you'll really understand why it was that way. Story-wise, he earns that title, which is something I am a huge fan of, especially with that. I'd say the last couple minutes is pretty great. Oh, the second part was what? Oh, yeah, I just act harder. The bigger the fight, the more I... No, I mean... Look, I've done $4 million independents to these and to others that are coming up. And, you know, I think that the most and the biggest important thing that I draw is the director, the script, and the character I can kind of envelop myself with. So it's no different.
Any pressure or thought about updating a time period, given that most of the film takes place on a different planet entirely?
No, and I think the team could answer this as well, but again, I think Andrew was going back to the books themselves and trying to be as true as possible to how Burroughs saw Mars back then, and how Burroughs looked at an astronomer at that time named Percival Lowell and some of his theories at that time that have since been disproven, but that's what Burroughs knew in that time, that's what Burroughs thought, and that's essentially what Andrew tried to bring to life. Same thing with the Civil War story is kind of the interesting arc of the character. Definitely took place back then, took place American Civil War, but at the end of the day, it's not necessarily the time period, it's an event in John Carter's life that people can relate to. They can relate to war, they can relate to loss, they can relate to trying to find themselves as well. So I think Andrew's trying to be true to the original books and staying within that time frame.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we've got time for one more question. So who's going to be ready to take a photograph?
This one's for Taylor. What preparation did you do to get into the character of John Carter?
Sorry, I interrupted. Is that the... Okay. Well, the body CG, which was great, because I could just eat anything I wanted. No, it was a really excessively boring diet. A regimen of around 11 months, 4 and then 7 while shooting. And then the same kind of regiment with training. And then I've said it before, I really just tried to connect to the Civil War. Sat down with a bunch of historians and professors at University of Texas and studied the Civil War. And they gave me hundreds of letters of Civil War veterans and guys that were writing home. And I learned an incredible amount through that. And you take what you can from those things and apply it when you can. But yeah, that was probably the biggest base I had to draw from, was the honor and the sacrifice that he did and the guilt that he carried for leaving his family, for trying to protect them. So.
Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed. That's all the time we have, I'm afraid.
Well, there you go. That's the audio for John Carter, and that is the end of the show. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to our sponsors, touringplans.com. You can head over to touringplans.com and check out the crowd calendar. You can check out the touring plans, and you can check out their Lines app as well. Thank you to Juz.
Oh, thank you.
And Kez.
Thanks, guys.
That's weird. And actually, I need to be known as Ads now, don't I? Because I'm the only one who doesn't have a Z at the end of their name.
Well, we've got a nickname for you, but well, we're not saying.
Oh, okay. thank you. Very nice. Anyway, thanks to you guys for joining us. Do make sure you email us your questions, comments and suggestions, podcast@disneybrit.com. You can also make sure you ring our voicemail number, which is
407-545-7980.
Well done. And also check out our website, disneybrit.com. There'll be loads of new stuff going up there over the next couple of weeks, certainly. Check out our Facebook fan page, our Disney Brit fan page. Friend up myself, Juz and Kez on Facebook. This is it, Kez. Now you're going to end up with thousands and thousands
of friends. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Friend me up.
Friend me up. Not feel me up, friend me up. Oh. And then Mouse Mag, there was a new issue of Mouse Mag that came out at the beginning of January. You can go and grab that over on magcloud.com. You can also get it through the MagCloud iPad app. Leave us a review on iTunes. Also go over to our YouTube channel. You'll find some of the video basically from the question and answer that was with the John Carter stuff as well. You can also listen to loads of great stuff over at Orlando Sky Radio, which is orlandoskyradio.com. Over there, you will find something called Disney Brit Bites, which are like little hints and tips we'll be playing during the day. You'll hear Craig Duncan's Soul Show, which is on there every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. I believe. Am I right in saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. But yeah, you had to mention his show because Sorry. We put some Disney Bites into his show. Yes, just to make him growly.
But also, there's going to be a new Disney Brit music style show coming up soon as well, which we will tell you more about once that's got off the ground.
Adam's doing karaoke.
Yeah, it's just me doing karaoke. Kez doing karaoke. Yep. Check out our sister podcast, Iron Orlando. You can hear that over on Orlando Sky Radio as well as download it as a podcast. Discot.net is another place you can head to for all the Disney social media stuff that's going on over there. And that's pretty much everything, I believe, which leaves me with nothing to say other than the next show will be on Wednesday, the 15th of February. And until then, we'll see you.